practice as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Wow. Greetings, the automatically deleted husband. Automatically deleted again, but a voicemail's being left. What happened? I've been wondering about this, because why does it, you have these periods for an extended period of time where the voicemail is full. My guess is it's full because it's full of me, since I'm leaving long messages for you. And you have something that you do that takes you away from this. So obviously it leaves me with lots of questions. You know, I used to know a lot of things about my wife and, you know, the things that would happen day to day and so forth. But for some reason, she's denied that to me lately. I think maybe she thinks Romans 7 isn't part of the Bible, nor is 1 Corinthians 7. It's just my guess. Because she does talk about, Jesus is the Redeemer, but as I pointed out, she's the Redeemer of his elect. And how do you know you're part of the elect? Well, there's some evidence. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. And this idea of pursuing reconciliation, which is a commandment, especially in the case of the wife, again, 1 Corinthians 7:11. If you ignore that, especially when the husband is trying to reconcile with you, what does that mean? And especially considering you seem to turn to the state more than the Lord, because as I pointed out in a few days ago, that you and I even sent the DVD to your dad, in reference to you're looking to the state to watch your back, using your words, not the Lord, which concerns me because, you see, I love my wife. In spite of all the things that's happened, I love my wife. And I'm concerned that she is living a life of institutionalism, not trusting in Christ. And there's the ripple effect as, what does that do to my kids, our kids? You know, clearly we have, at least that I'm aware of, two notable cases of kids who have blatantly turned from being obedient to Christ, specifically Eric Lee and Jack. But, you know, and then, of course, what's happened with the rest? The model they have set before them is Christ doesn't matter. I mean, that's the reality of it. The model they have set before them is Christ doesn't matter. And that concerns me greatly, because I love my kids and I love my wife. But the important things, that's important too. But anyway, I did find a design error and under pressure. And I said, no, I got to fix it. So I spent the day fixing that. And hopefully that'll be done tomorrow. Another delay, and these delays are. But on the other side of the coin is one of the things that hit me really strong today is that in the last several weeks, so many things have fallen in place that my focus and my work has been very concentrated. I have everything in place, basically, to do the work that I'm doing. There is nothing hindering me, you know, obviously besides my technical errors or things of that nature, but I have the things in place to work. And I thought, that's wonderful. Because, you know, I was having problems, you know, the financial issues, being distracted with gas pumps and whatnot. I don't have that right now. And the expression that came to mind is the idea of make hay while the sun shines, which obviously is not a biblical expression, but it does allude to something from the Bible, specifically John 12. So I decided to look into that today. Because, you know, in the context, let me just read the passages, verse 36 to 43, just so we have, we're on the same page. While you have the light, believe in the light, that you may become sons of the light. When Jesus said these things, he departed and hid himself from them. So starting from that, while you have the light, obviously Jesus is the light. Believe in the light, believe in Jesus, that you may become sons of the light, sons of God. Then while Jesus is saying, he departed and hid himself from them, which, you know, the hid himself is kind of like interesting because of, well, the rest of the, well, anyway, it goes on. Though he had done so many things, signs before them, they still did not believe in him. So that the word spoken by the prophet Isaiah might be fulfilled. Lord, who has believed what you heard from, what he heard from us? And whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Therefore, they could not believe. For again, Isaiah said, he has blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts, lest they see with their eyes and understand with their hearts and turn and I would heal them. Well, clearly there's a consistent context with election here. But that's not the point. Verse 41, Isaiah said these things because he saw his glory and spoke of him. So saw his glory. He saw Jesus. I would contend he saw Jesus Christ. Nevertheless, many even of the authorities believed in him, but for fear of the Pharisees, they did not confess it, so they would not be put out of the synagogue. For they love the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God. This was fascinating. For a number of reasons. Obviously, many of the authorities believed in him. Who's an example? Nicodemus. He was obviously an authority. But for fear of the Pharisees, they did not confess it. Nicodemus came by night. This is John 3. So they would not be put out of the synagogue. You believe in Christ? Get out of here. You contend for obedience to Christ in the institutional church? We'll send the police. I mean, what's changed? Literally nothing. You want to reconcile with the leadership of the church? We're not going to talk to you. Go away. So, I mean, nothing's changed. But, it's... This started with the idea, make hay while the sun shines. What's shine, you know, brightness, glory, whatnot. But in this case, he saw his glory, and they love the glory that comes from man rather than the glory that comes from God. What is that? And this was a fascinating study. It's the Greek word doxa, where we get things like doxology and things of that nature. And what I assumed... part of the, you know, using the Thayer definition, Thayer, Thayer, whatever it is, splendor, brightness, majesty, and those kind of things, you know, so that's kind of the idea that I have, but that's not the first part of the definition. And especially when I engage a little bit more with the word, it's not, because the first definition, opinion, judgment, view, or opinion, estimate, whether good or bad, concerning someone. You know, so basically, opinion or judgment. And when you look at that, and you can see, well, yes, is the judgment of someone who is magnificent that gives them kind of a glory or a shine to them. So you can see where the one builds on for the other. So, when you look at verse 41, Isaiah said these things because he saw his glory and spoke of him, his glory. You know, wow. You know, because we see, you know, he's an unapproachable light. All the brightness and you know, let there be light is, you know, he's the light of the world and all those kind of things. You could say, okay, the glory, this guy shines. This guy's really polished. But when you look at the other aspect of it, is it What makes him shine? What makes him glorious? Is it because of the judgments he makes? Because the judgments he makes are not kind of, oh, well, that seems wise. No, it's, whoa. I mean, really? When I looked at the Isaiah passage that he's quoting, the Hebrew word does have that glory, the glory type, meaning to it. The Septuagint uses the doxa, or actually a word that has doxa embedded in it. I won't get too in depth here, but so I found that fascinating because, you know, one of the things that was mentioned, because I reviewed this, of course, with Chris today, and he pointed, you know, I said, what about this? So Exodus 33:18, Moses said, please show me your glory. And he said, I'll make all my goodness pass before you and will proclaim before you my name, the Lord. And I'll be gracious to whom I'll be gracious and will show mercy to whom I will show mercy. You know, please show me your glory. It is that basis of the doxa idea. And you can say, you know, all right, my goodness will pass before you. My goodness. What is my goodness? Is it something that shines bright or his tremendous judgment? You know, the opinion, wow, of the Lord is just fantastic. And especially, I'll be gracious to whom I'm gracious, and I will show mercy to whom I will show mercy. That is really a wow kind of judgment. It is not a shining light in the sense of, oh, we're going to see some bright fellow. But the thing that is so amazing, really is amazing, is the judgments of God. It's not like, you know, considering we just had a recent event, you know, last week, I guess it was, you know, a court appearance on the phone. And this is the judgment of man. I'm sorry, nothing like the judgment of God. I mean, God's, his reason, you know, his ways are higher than our ways and so forth. But so when you look at glory as the sparkling bright lights kind of stuff versus the opinion or judgment or view, the view, you know, God's view, his perspective, kind of like, I mean, that's wow. And that is glorious in remarkable ways. So when you read those last three verses, look at it, look at the glory in that sense. Isaiah said these things because he saw his glory and spoke of him. He didn't see God's glory and say, wow, you're a bright fellow, but wow, your wisdom, your graciousness are just fantastic. He's because he saw his glory. Nevertheless, many even of the authorities believed in him, for the fear of the Pharisees, they did not confess it, so they would not be put out of the synagogue, for they love the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God. The glory that comes from man, what is that now? I want my fellow Pharisees, you know, leadership, whatnot, I want their judgment of me to give me esteem. I'm looking for their judgment more than the judgment of God. And it's kind of like, ew. I did read the LSV version. For they love the glory of men more than the glory of God. So it's You know, because this is the glory that comes from man versus the glory of man. So it is, it's the glory. I read there was another translation that, the idea of the praise, or the approval. Especially like the idea of approval. Let's see what translation was that. I just saw that here. The approval is, the Good News Bible. They love human approval rather than the approval of God, which I think is, it makes very good sense when we look at the meaning of the word doxa, for the glory that comes from man, the approval of man. I want my peers to say I am special and I'm part of the group. The verse before, which I would say is consistent with that idea again, so that they would not be put out of the synagogue. I want their approval, so I'm part of the group. This is what Nicodemus did. Rather than go out front and say, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, he went to see him at night because he didn't, you know. So, you know, and as I look at my own life, as I was kind of introduced to Christ, you know, there was the introduction as a kid, you know, Charlie Brown and Christmas kind of thing. Oh, but when I actually started to say, all right, I want to know this Christ, you know, basically in my late 20s, you know, there was still for years, it was, I wanted to be part of the group. I see that in myself. I wanted to be part of the collective I joined, whether it was the pro-life community I was part of, or eventually the various institutional churches I were a part of. I wanted to be a part of that group. That group was important to me, and the recognition of me was important. You know, pride. Guilty. But the maturing, I think, is I want the glory or the judgment, the approval that comes from God. I want to hear not from my peers, hey, you're part of the team, but I want to hear from God, well done, good and faithful servant. That's my drive now. That wasn't my drive many, many years ago. But it is my drive now. In the grace of God. So I really think this is fascinating. So it relates to, I've seen several people, I've seen some discussions lately about, I've actually seen several and I can't come up with them, but anyway, where people are talking about, something on the gray zone. I saw they were, he was very clear about this, where they talked about, they talked about how years ago, decades ago, there was more of an effort within the journalism community to ask the hard questions. You know, this is the era of Watergate, for example, where some journalists asked some hard questions and it didn't go over well. But so much of that has gone away. Again, this is the point, you know, I made the comment about how Nils Mesler, however his name is pronounced, the UN rapporteur on torture, who pointed out in that Ithaca video, how the point of putting Julian Assange in prison and torturing him is not to torture him per se, but to muzzle everybody else. I mean, he articulated it very clearly. The point is not we're going to get, because, you know, again, so many people don't know much anymore about WikiLeaks or who Julian Assange is. But if you're in the field, you know about him and you say, I don't want to follow in his footsteps. And then there's the other side of the coin. There's the approval of your peers. You want to be in a place brought to you by Pfizer, and therefore you promote what Pfizer has to say because they're paying you really big bucks. So you have the fear aspect, I don't want to be tortured, and you have the things of this world, the lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life kind of thing, because you're going to go far if you don't ask the hard questions, but you make the person you're asking questions of look good when he's a person in power, because you're feeding each other. That's what's done. What's the difference in the institutional church? I mean, really, what's the difference? When you get to the point that you have position, authority, and whatnot, you don't want to be questioned. You don't want the hard questions. You know, if somebody comes and says, the Bible is true and the institutional church is a fraud, and I will publicly engage you on that, and I will even do a formal debate, what you will do is you will say nothing. You'll be silent. You don't want somebody to ask you the hard questions, especially publicly. Because if you're called out publicly, your position is threatened. So don't get your position threatened. This is exactly what Nicodemus did by visiting Jesus at night. Obviously, things changed, post the resurrection, because he was involved there too. But, you know, because they're interested in the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God. Those are really hard words. And again, by the way, I wasn't the author of this. So I really think that's important. I really think this is important. You know, again, I did some more study on the way it's used in the Old Testament, but this is time consuming. But that alone was enough, and really, it's worth looking at. And I would suggest the important thing is there's a consistent message here, in the sense that the Bible is true and consistent from beginning to end. You know, this idea that he had to make adjustments here and there. No. You know, he's the one who calls out the end from the beginning and so forth. And he's the one who also can tell you about the beginning because he was there. He did it. And so the God that we serve, assuming you serve the God who describes himself in the Bible, is magnificent and consistent. And getting to know him is absolutely marvelous. And I love to be able to share this with my family. Because on rare occasion, I make mistakes. Just like I did in my software. But and the interaction, you know, again, when I was reviewing this, because I did a quick review, and then my friend Chris came up with the line from Moses, which I really think helped in our dialogue. And there's so much more on this is a common expression. So there's so much more to look into this, but that just simply brought delight to the day, because I'm not after the glory of man anymore. I used to be guilty. Those words, you know, I really think the idea is when those words become precious to you and say, yes, that's my goal. Well done, good and faithful servant. When you look at those words and you say, yeah, that's my goal in life. It's not a monument. It's not to have a retirement plan. It's not to have fame and fortune. It's to hear from my Creator, well done, good and faithful servant. That's a goal we're striving for. And the only way you can get it is by His grace. Because I'm not interested in the glory that comes from man, but the glory that comes from God, the judgment, His opinion, His view, His perspective of me. I want Him to look at me as a good and faithful servant. And by His gift, I pray I live that out. I hope that's true for others in my family and extended family, friends, so forth. What a marvelous thing to hear. What a marvelous thing to pursue. Anyway, I want to share this with my wife. I don't know what's going on with her. A week of mailbox full, and now it's available again. Why? What's going on with my wife? I remember it was a constant when we would go places hand in hand constantly, when we would drive in our Suburban hand in hand while we're driving constantly. The thing that I so enjoyed in the evening sitting with the family would sit, I'd have my legs often propped up on something. My wife would put her legs on top of mine. Because we sat together, not just simply, you know, near each other, but physically next to each other. We were, physically touching, and then her legs on top of mine. I enjoyed that intensely. And I'm sorry. I don't think she wants it at all. Clearly, the evidence is overwhelming. But I want it back. I don't want someone to do this with. There's only one lady for me. One and one alone. Something about marriage defined and a commitment beyond. I wonder about that. I want my lady back. My one and only. My assumption is that won't happen. But I'm not going to give up. Things, as I really hit hard today, basically everything's in place. I don't have any barrier whatsoever right now from pursuing. You know, I think about when I do my jumping jacks, you know, I slow down my rate and try to work on my form. And I think, you know, my morning is stronger because it, and especially when I get to later in the day, I feel it in me that I don't feel weak. I feel the Lord says, I'm holding you fast physically. When I take a walk, and I intend to take a walk tomorrow, hopefully after it rains, it's easy. It remains easy to walk aggressively long distance. It is the Lord's grace. The fact that I have this home to live in, the fact that everything seems to be working, my equipment, and so forth. The fact that my rent's paid for 6 months. I just got my internet bill today. My monthly bill came today paid because it's been paid 5 months ahead of time still. You know, and electricity's paid over 5 months ahead. I got, my tomorrow's milk and eggs delivered, and I'm paid through I'm paid into April sometime, I think. I have plenty of food. I don't have any barriers right now. Obviously, that can change any moment. But while I don't have that barrier, I got to press on with vigor. Because I have a goal. In the grace of God, I have a goal. I stumbled along the way. Again, my goal of several days ago for the end of the month, I didn't make. And it's now, 2 days into the month, and I'm not there. Hopefully this weekend I'll be celebrating that I'm working on the next part. But again, I'm trying to produce a work of art. The other thing I'm trying to produce is something when I hand to somebody else, it's kind of like, oh, well, that's obvious. That's so easy. Why did it take so long? That's really the thing that gets to me, is when you make so much effort to make something easy, it's kind of like, well, that's easy. Why did it take so long? The way to make something simple is to do a whole bunch of stupid things, complex stuff and whatnot, and realize that's not the way to do it, and then do it right. It takes a long time. But in the grace of God, it happens, and I can deliver. And Lord willing, there's no barriers right now. I pray that the Lord will keep it that way, and I can deliver. The one thing that I'm very willing to say, okay, my distraction, I'm distracted, I have some different focus, is if my wife says, yes, let's reconcile. Yeah, that'll take my attention for sure. I desire that so much. My lady, my wife, I'm pushing hard right now because the Lord has blessed me. I pray the Lord has blessed you, holds you fast, and shows you the importance of reconciliation, and that you'll live that with the man you committed your life to. You know, that would be me. My lady, I love you and I want you back.